Hello and welcome to another episode of Bank FinTech Fusion. This is Philip Ryan, Director of Communications with CCG Catalyst, and I'm here with Raj Patel, COO and co-founder of Mantle. Welcome, Raj.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming. Tell us a bit about Mantle and tell us what drew you into financial services. You could have done anything in the world and here you are working in fintech. Why is that?
Sure. Yeah. So Mantle is an enterprise software company based in New York. We exclusively build technology for community regional banks and credit unions across the United States. We don't derive any of our revenue from money center banks. We don't derive any of our revenue from fintech. Fintech clients, it is primarily for community and regional banks, which is hopefully some of the audience of this podcast. We originally got drawn to the idea by setting off to try to build a challenger bank, which is a very, very popular thought.
There's a few of those around.
There's a few of those around, and there were still a few of those around in 2016 when we kind of first thought about this idea. When we were investigating that, one of the things we realized when we were looking at the competitive landscape was that actually, you've got the money center banks that have the infrastructure and the resources to invest and build technology, and you've got the neobanks and the challenger banks that are coming through and also building really interesting technology. And then you had the middle. And who was getting squeezed in the middle? It was community and regional banks and credit unions in the United States. 25 years ago, the money center banks had 16% of all deposits in the United States. Now they have 59%. And where's that coming from? It's coming out of the community and regional banks, and it's going to those money centers and those neobanks. And what's happening is that that's squeezing competition in the market. It's giving customers less choices, and it's really hurting the industry. And that's not a good thing for the country.
There are fewer of those banks every day.
And one of the primary reasons for that is the technology gap, right? Because those banks and credit unions are providing excellent service. They're providing more compelling products, right? Where they're not being able to compete is on the technology side. 96% of all technology in community and regional banks is outsourced. And unfortunately, it's outsourced to an oligopoly. And those players have been around since the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's when they were founded. And they don't have necessarily an incentive to innovate because they've got a captive market. And so we saw a really big opportunity to bring the mindset of fintech and our banking backgrounds to that space and really help and provide a genuine alternative to the core providers and hopefully help really reinvigorate and continue to grow the industry, because we think that's a really good thing for the country and consumers.
And so what exactly is the product you're selling?
Absolutely. So we have a number of different products, but probably the one we're most known for is our account opening suite of software. So we started primarily in consumer account opening because that was an area where we saw a really big need. You know, only 20% of all banks and credit unions in the United States have account opening online, right? And obviously we know that the internet is where the world does business. And so if you can't meet the customer where they are, you can't hope to compete or retain those customers, particularly for the millennial generation, the newest generation.
So who are all going to the big banks because that's where they
absolutely can do that. Right? Like 45% of millennials identify one of the big four as their primary banking relationship. So the next generation is literally walking out the door and going to those, and they're going to own them for life if community regional banks don't compete. So where could we drive the biggest value for the industry really quickly? It was account opening. And so today, we're fortunate enough to work with dozens of institutions across the United States, helping them attract more customers, more consumer customers. And we've since expanded our product line to also do business customers as well.
And you're providing more software as well for banks, right, in between the core and the customer?
Absolutely. So, one of the things we needed to do to innovate in the industry versus potentially existing players was to bring a much newer approach and put a modern technology stack on the industry, which is sometimes difficult because there's a lot of legacy systems. Everything in our ecosystem is API first. So we have an abstraction layer that we can put on top of any core operating system. Importantly, our code base is unified. So it's truly enterprise software. So one code base, which goes across every single customer, whether you're a bank at 400 million or a credit union at 25 billion, you get the same code base from Mantle. And that means that every Wednesday, you get an update from us. We did 40 updates last year, instead of sort of the paradigm that you might see in the industry of one or two regulatory updates a year. And so what that lets us do is it lets us continue to stay extremely relevant and very cutting edge. And that's the type of technology that is being used in industries outside of banking. and needs to come to banking.
How much of a challenge is it to work with the cores? Is it a kind of one and done thing, or is it a constant struggle?
Yeah, so there's no shying away from it. The expertise to interact with a core operating system is very unique. And we do see a lot of fintechs and new entrants into the market try to abstract away from that and not do it because it's difficult, but it's required. It's just required. You can't innovate in this industry without a good understanding of the core operating system. They are entrenched. They're not going anywhere. There isn't amazing alternatives right now for banks to switch and credit unions to switch off it. And so you need to be able to integrate with them. We built that capability from day one. So we have team members that built, you know, across our team. We've had each of our engineers has been one of the first five technical hires at various core operating systems like FIS, Miser, and Fiserv DNA. And to date, we've done over a dozen different core banking systems successfully integrated and live. So it's a challenge. It's an area you have to invest in and understand. It's not the sexiest area of the technology stack for our engineers to work on, but you have to own that. And you have to understand that that's a challenge, and you have to be a safe pair of hands there.
And bank customers understand nothing about it, which is probably a good thing.
Yes, exactly. We don't talk too much about our abstraction layer and API set in sort of bank sales conversations, but sometimes with the technology folks, they get really excited about what it can do.
What's the most important lesson that you've learned in your brief career so far?
Sure. I think in my career, as opposed to sort of just working in this industry, I think the thing that I learned way back when, sort of 8 years ago when I started my first company was, and I think it serves me well today and Mantle as an organization, is we often get comfortable leaning on what we like doing or what we know how to do. And that often isn't actually the thing you need to do to grow your business or with a client. And so like the tangible example is in my first company, my undergrad was in finance and then I went to law school and I was an investment banker for a little while after college before I saw the light and became an entrepreneur. And when I started my first company, I spent a lot of time in legal documents and financial models because that's what I knew and that's what I thought was what made a difference. And actually, it makes very little, if any, difference. And what actually makes a difference is getting out and talking to customers and understanding what to build and solving problems for them and bringing solutions and selling, right, and delivering. And if that's the most important thing in the business, then that's where you, as you know, one of the more important people in the company and as one of the founders, needs to run to and make that your own. And it might be something that you're uncomfortable doing, maybe not particularly good at, but you need to get comfortable and you need to get good at it. And so that was a personal sort of growth thing for me, and I think it also serves Mantle well because just like we were talking in the last question about the core operating system, that's not something that, you know, a normal modern full stack engineer is wanting to understand or typically wants to work on. But it's the unsexy thing that is not comfortable, but it's the thing that makes a really big difference. And so Mantle is an organization that runs towards those sorts of things.
So with so many problems to choose from, how do you choose which problem you're going to tackle?
Tackle next. Yeah. The customers tell us, right? And so, you know, we have to stay very close to our customers. You know, they know their problems best. We need to be good at understanding and passing through what they're telling us. We often have individuals tell us, and this is no fault of their own because this is how they express it. We often have banks and credit unions come to us with the solution and not the problem. So they'll be like, oh, it would be great if you built this, right? And that's good. That's good feedback. But even better than that is, I have this problem.
Right.
Because often what the solution that they jump to embeds a whole bunch of assumptions of what is possible, but we actually know a whole nother set of things are possible. And so if we have the underlying problem to start with, we can start with a blank piece of paper. And other people necessarily might not because of just the paradigm they've been in. And so it's listening. It's a lot of listening. It's a lot of asking leading questions. It's a lot of talking about what's happening now. What are you struggling with? Technology problems or non-technology problems. Sometimes the biggest insights we've gained are from conversations that have nothing to do with technology because the person doesn't even realize that technology can solve it.
Right. What is the biggest challenge facing Mantle right now?
Yeah, I'd say it's the way the industry generally thinks about technology. I think for a long time, and I certainly feel this in some of my conversations, certainly sometimes I don't, that the industry views technology as an expense, which makes absolute sense because on the P&L, if you're talking to a bank CFO, it is on the expense line item, right? It's reported to the FDIC as, you know, data processing. It's an expense.
Look how much I spent on this.
Correct, yeah. Right? It's right next to payroll and rent and utilities, and so it's an expense, right? It's an expense from an accounting construct. But if you think about technology in other industries, a lot of the buying decision in technology is talking about it as a capital investment, right? And it's a lot of institutions look at investing in technology just like they look at investing in opening a new branch or a new division or acquiring something. I can spend $1 million technology. I can spend $1 million on headcount. I can spend $1 million acquiring this business. I can spend $1 million investing in marketing, right? It's capital allocation. And often the questions we get when people looking to purchase technology is expense questions, not investment questions. And what do I mean by that? It's what's this going to cost me? How do I minimize the cost? Versus, great, what's it going to cost me? How do I minimize the cost? But also, what is the expected return from the technology, right? If I go and buy $1 million of technology, whether it's with Mantle or anybody else, how is my business economically going to be better off? Am I going to drive $500,000 of cost efficiency? Am I going to increase my revenue growth or, in this case, deposit growth or, you know, asset growth or whatever it is in a banking context? Am I going to increase that by X percent next year? What is the economic return that I'm going to get on my economic investment? And I think the banks certainly understand that concept and opportunity cost and capital investment because they do these sort of calculations all the time, whether to build a new branch or buy a competitor or return money to their shareholders. But in the past, they haven't thought about technology that way because usually the options they've gotten never express or articulate to them what their expected return should be, right? They don't see any expected return from all the technology they've bought in the past. And so when we come in and say, well, here's the cost of our technology, but here's the results that we would like you to see, or here are the efficiencies you should gain quantified, I think that that changes the paradigm. And so that moving the industry in that way to start by asking investment questions versus expense questions, I think is the really big thing holding back a lot of institutions from really innovating here.
And do you see a lot of disparity? Do you see some institutions that are really looking at this in a more enlightened way?
Exactly, right? And I would say the people that are first over the wall and the fast followers are asking the question, what's all the fuss about over here? And they're looking at it critically, of course, because you absolutely should, but are looking at it more in that way. And I think that those that are potentially not in that bucket, who are a little bit more wait and see, are still thinking about it as an expense question. The proof's going to be in the pudding, right? If enough institutions make these investments and drive real returns, which I think the Chases of the world are, et cetera, you will see more and more do this. I mean, the BB&T merger with SunTrust, I mean, the biggest rationale of that, well, one of the two biggest rationales was technology,
cost
efficiency, and the ability to invest more in technology.
Right.
That was
the
second one, right? They literally cited JP Morgan and said, they're spending billions a year on technology. We need more.
What is it, 11
muscle.
Billion or something? Yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, technology expense is the fastest growing line item of expenses in the industry, right? It is, you know, there's an expense reduction push in the industry, but technology's, you know, growing at a double-digit CAGR because banks are realizing that if they don't invest here, they're going to see attrition in their customer base. And so it's very topical.
Right. A lot of banks describe themselves as technology companies, but
yes,
really they're large.
Like Wells Fargo.
Right. But they're customers of technology, right? They're some of the largest buyers of technology across.
The banking industry is one of the single biggest buyers of technology. I mean, think about it. It supports over $120 billion of market cap for just technology companies that sell primarily to banks.
Yeah, incredible. So what does success look like for bank fintech partnerships? Is it that straight up revenue like you were saying?
I think it's – we find that the banks that we think about it the best and often achieve the best results have a numerical goal in mind. And it's more than just, you know, a lot of times we talk to institutions, they're like, I'd like to improve my customer experience. And of course, absolutely, we want to improve the customer experience. But what is that going to do for the customer? And what's that going to do for the institution, right? We should be able to measure that. So let's set a goal that's measurable. Let's find what the control is today. Let's make some changes, invest, and then let's see what the measurement moves to and what the change in economic outcome is, right? And that can be as simple as net promoter score or survey results. It could be more complex, like deposits raised, amount of accounts you open, new members or customers, whatever it happens to be for your institution. If we think that every time a bank or a credit union is investing in technology, they should set a goal for that technology, they should then talk to their vendors about how the technology is going to help them achieve their goals and the likely expected results, and then they should measure the project and the technology against that. And what you should be hoping for is 6 months, 12 months down the line, you're looking at the KPIs of what we all went into this relationship for, right? And we should see those results or better. Here's how we've done versus where we wanted to be, right? Here's what we've achieved. And guess what that does? I mean, not only does that mean that internally the bank can show that this investment was successful, can show it to its investors, it can show it to itself, right? It knows that it's having an impact on its customers, but also the next time you're trying to make a technology investment, you have a track record, right? It's a much easier conversation internally.
Right. So what's the largest challenge of working with banks and you know, the banks that the ones who say no, the ones you don't get, what are they telling you?
Yeah. It's usually two things. One of them I've already spoken about. They think about it as an expense, so it's still an expense minimization.
Yeah.
The second biggest, and I think this is structural and the industry will change. Just like I think they'll change about their thinking on expense versus, and I've already started to see it, expense versus investment, is capability inside the bank. You know, some institutions, and this is absolutely no fault of their own because they haven't needed it and they've been very, very successful until now, is digital marketing capabilities.
Right.
Right? You know, you wouldn't be surprised if Casper or Away or, you know, other great direct-to-consumer brands that we have here in York have excellent digital marketing capabilities. And a community regional bank that maybe has 20 branches and has operated in, you know, 12 counties and hasn't done anything online, you wouldn't be surprised that they don't have digital marketing capabilities. And that makes sense because they didn't need it. But in the new world, they will, right? Whether they use Mantle or anybody else, whether they acquire customers online or not, you need to be there and you need to have that capability. And so that's just one of a number of different capabilities that, you know, banks and credit unions will need to build as the industry changes and technology becomes a bigger and bigger part of it. If you want to be a technology company, you need to
let people know that you're a
it's not just hiring technology staff.
Right?
It changes the nature of operations. It changes the nature of compliance. It changes the nature of marketing as well. Right?
Yeah. So do you often advise people, look, you're building this great thing, but no one's going to know about it? You have a great account opening software.
Sure.
How are people going to know?
Sure.
Or are they thinking about it? Are their marketing people thinking about it on this level?
They're thinking about it. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. These individuals are very self-aware and they understand the challenges. They understand how they make money and lose money. They understand the challenges of technology. They're just on different places on the curve of adoption. Right. And I don't think I ever really go into a conversation and they're like, and, you know, somebody says to me, you know, we have the skills to do this, but it's obvious that they don't. That's not usually the conversation. It's usually like, you know, we want to do this, but we also know we have to change this, you know, improve the skill set, add FTEs, you know, additional training, et cetera. We're going to need to learn. This is a new capability for the institution. Right? Like I said, only 20% of banks and credit unions in America have online account openings. So that means 80% of them have no existing capability there.
Right.
They're going to have to learn it, right, in some form. And so it's not, you know, it's not particularly revolutionary to think that's going to need to happen. And that's not a two-week process. Hiring people, and I know this over my own company, and Catalyst, you guys, you know, for sure see this is, you know, that takes time.
Yeah. Are you seeing a lot of outsourced IT at the banks you're talking to?
We are seeing that more and more. And actually, I was in an interesting regulatory conversation recently with a Fed regulator. And particularly, they were talking to smaller banks and credit union institutions. And with obviously increasing regulation, which is also very topical in the industry, one of the things that the examiner said is, you know, cybersecurity is a big risk. And, you know, one of the sort of bankers shot his hand up and said, like, I can't, particularly in a rural setting, I can't even get really a good CIO with cybersecurity expertise to apply to work at my institution, right? And there might be a $400 million bank in a potentially rural community. It's difficult to find that talent there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And the regulator said, I hear that 100%. And I have no objection to five of you getting together and getting a fifth of a CIO, outsourced CIO's resources.
Interesting.
Right? And so I think you're going to see that more and more, particularly at the lower asset level where it's just so burdensome.
It sounds more like a credit union thing just on the face of it. They're a little bit more about the sharing
resources. But that's something that I heard a regulator say to a group of banks, and the banks are all nodding and saying that's a very practical approach to this, because you're right. Like, this expertise needs to happen. It needs to happen from a growth perspective with something like Mantle, but it also needs to happen from a security perspective. From an InfoSec perspective, from a cybersecurity perspective, these banks need to have that expertise or somebody to call on. So I am definitely seeing it outsourced more and more. I'm also seeing digital marketing outsourced. And I also think that is one of the better ways for a bank to learn to start with, right? Have somebody come in, do for a little while to get going, but also while they're doing, they're training the talent that you have internally, right? It's not to say that somebody that's in marketing or in IT that is an expert at the core banking system or is an expert at, outdoor advertising cannot learn digital. They absolutely can. They just need some time to get up the curve on it, right? And so we're seeing that a lot.
Yeah. It does seem like you're giving something up once it's outside your walls. And I think a lot of these guys I can understand the reluctance, I guess, for a lot of people to outsource in that sense.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the challenges of you can't have everything inside your walls. What new technology are you most excited about? What are you keeping your eye on that you think is going to have a positive impact in banking?
Yeah. So I'm a little different in that I don't necessarily think, I'm not going to sit here and say, blockchain's going to change everything or anything like that, although I do think it's an interesting thought experiment if the US dollar was on a blockchain.
Right, China's going to do that, right? China's putting...
And I think that's the bull case for blockchain technology because it would avoid, it would then have perfect taxation and no money laundering because the Federal Reserve could see every dollar moved in the economy.
Right.
I think that the two things that I look at and I think are really interesting over the next 24 months, which I think is a little bit more actionable, are these. Everybody's talking about payments. Payments are getting faster. The flip side of payments getting faster, and community regional banks don't have this capability today, and the big guys are starting to, is real-time transaction monitoring. If you increase the velocity of payments, you need to increase the velocity of the checks you're doing on those payments. Right now, the big AML providers that are feeding a lot of these, SARs and things like that, and all the regulatory requirements from a BSA and AML perspective, a batch. And so banks are finding out about transactions 24, 48 hours after they're initiated when they're already out in the ether. Now, that's okay potentially in a world where it takes 2 to 3 days to settle. But that is absolute death from a risk perspective and a compliance perspective in a real-time world. And so I think a lot of attention goes to the real-time payments and not enough attention is going to real-time transaction monitoring. It's an area that we've been working on with a great friend and partner of ours called Alloy here in New York. It's a really interesting fintech.
Great company.
Great company. Yeah, Tommy, Charles and Laura are awesome. And I think that's something that's going to be really interesting, and then kind of the flip side. And I think, institutions who go out with real-time and don't have that other piece are going to unfortunately get hurt. I think the other thing, and that's now, you can do that today, right?
Real time.
Yeah. Now, you could have done that last year, but it would have cost an arm and a leg, right? And the big guys could afford it. That cost structure is starting to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to go mainstream as real-time payments go mainstream. So that's interesting. The second thing I'd say is that the industry generally has made huge leaps and bounds on the consumer side in terms of automation and customer experience. And you're seeing that with a lot of the neobanks coming through, the money center banks. Chase just did a new version of their mobile app. Wells Fargo's investing quite significantly now. And the customer experience between now and 10 years ago, the mobile app, the digital experiences are night and day. That ramp or that change has not been fully reflected on the business side, on commercial. And whether it's small business all the way up to Fortune 500s and anywhere in the middle, even in mid-markets, right?
And these are some of your most important customers.
Absolutely. They have terrible... These are the most profitable customers of a bank or credit union, right? And the technology is coming and is here to do that. And you're starting to see a lot of the challenger banks and the newer challenger banks move into the commercial side and not
Grasshopper,
even go,
yeah.
Grasshopper, Brex.
Yeah.
There's a great company in New York called Ramp that I'd keep an eye on. And there's others. And I think you're going to start seeing technology vendors come to banks with ready to market, ready to go pieces of technology on the business side and on the commercial side that's going to vastly improve the customer experience and provide some automation that right now doesn't exist in the industry that's going to drastically change the cost structure of running and supporting a commercial bank. And I think that in the next 24 months is going to be a big trend as well.
I remember talking to one of the cores, I won't say which one, and they were saying, no, we have no kind of out-of-the-box, off-the-shelf product for small businesses, like zero.
It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. The regulations are more burdensome. The document requirements are more significant. And today, in a normal bank, it's paper, right? And that can take anywhere from 45 minutes for a single member LLC at a Chase branch up to 4 hours, 4 days, 4 weeks for more complicated entities. When you're coming in and you're running a real estate business and you have, you know, 17 different buildings, you know, and maybe 400 different tenant accounts where you've got escrows, that's a really complicated business to onboard for a bank. And that takes weeks and months.
Right.
Right. And that's going to come down in days over the next 24 months.
Interesting.
And so I think that's going to be really big. It's not particularly sexy. It's not, you know, consumer facing or real time payments or blockchain. But I think from a sort of a brick and mortar traditional banking perspective, I think that they'll look at that and say, wow, that's really going to move the needle for us.
Right. And if you're talking about customer experience, you help your important customers have a better experience.
Correct.
That would be a differentiator.
Correct.
If the guy down the street doesn't have it.
Correct.
What is your ideal customer? What size is your sweet spot or who's your perfect customer?
Sure. Today, our smallest institution is about $400 million in assets. And we go up to about $50 billion today.
Big range.
Yeah, big range. There's 1,000 banks and credit unions inside that space in the United States today. And we have people all across that spectrum. On a median basis, I think it's right around $5 billion. So pretty substantial. And then kind of within that range, you know, as I said at the start, you know, we're not really interested in doing work for JP Morgan or Wells Fargo and money center banks. I think that they're, you know, they have their own teams and they're investing quite significantly, and that's great. And I think they're doing some really interesting things and leading the way. So, you know, we are really, really focused, laser focused on community and regional banks in that mid-market. And we think that there's a real opportunity for them to compete. So we're really looking for anyone in that space that wants to do something different and really try to, you know, make a step change in their capabilities.
And last question, where do you see community banks and credit unions 10 years from now? Obviously, it's a challenging environment right now, but how do you see things developing in the next decade?
Yep. Look, I see what everybody else sees, which is consolidation. That's what you see every day, every week. If you read American Banker, that's what you see in the, you know, the FDIC core reports. We're seeing consolidation. Interestingly enough, the number of banks and credit unions below a billion is falling, but between 1 and 10 is increasing. And
due to consolidation.
Due to consolidation of that kind of bottom quartile, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that interesting coalescence right below 10 billion because of the regulatory jump. It's like 10 and then there's you want to be a 20 right straight away. So you're seeing, you know, a lot of people jump there. So I think that there's going to be more consolidation. I just don't see how that reverses itself unless there's a significant change in consumer behavior, which I'm not forecasting. I think that banks and credit unions will be able to replicate the technology advantage that neobanks and money center banks have over time, because I think the industry is ripe for disruption. It's an oligopoly. It's, you know, it's the technology's been around for a long time. There's vendors like myself and others, I'm sure, that are looking at this problem and thinking it can be solved. So I think that there's going to be a huge efficiency gain from technology in the sector, in that segment. I think that will lower the cost structure for those entities and allow them to compete more against the economies of scale of the bigger guys. You know, beyond that, I think that there's likely to be a reskilling of the industry in some portion around the technology, and mm-hmm. I think they'll adapt and evolve. I don't think it goes away. I think it's healthy for the country, and I think it's healthy for consumers. And it's the stated, and you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but it's actually the stated goal of the regulator to foster smaller community regional banks, because what it does is competition. I'm originally from Australia, and in Australia, we have four big banks, and they own, I think, 3/4 of the banking market in Australia. And it's one of the most expensive banking markets in the entire world for consumers. America has significantly more competition. And on things like home equity mortgages, that really matters. And so for the health of the economy, we need community regional banks to exist and thrive.
Right. They built a lot of the wealth of the country.
Yeah. And a lot of places that those big banks don't want to go.
Yeah.
Right. And it's really, really important, and I think very topical. And I think that they're just super important to the structure of the economy.
Raj, thank you so much.
Yeah, pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Bank FinTech Fusion. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Bye.